This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Francis Nally. We're going to be discussing his new book out. It's called A Manifesto About Stalking Patrick Hyland. Francis Nally, great having you back on.
It's nice talking to you, Robert. It's nice to be on again.
So who exactly is this Patrick Hyland?
Who's Francis Nally? I wonder who that is, but... You mentioned Patrick Hyland. I kind of make it a mystery. I mean, you could simply Google search his name, or, you know, it's like Robert Smith or John Doe. Well, I kind of put it, when somebody doesn't know, I say it's like, well, it's the individual I wish I was, but I'm not. And seeing that individual and in my place and time where I am makes me jealous. And so I kind of developed this Andy Nowicki revenge fantasy because, you know, I like Andy Nowicki and I like Elliot Rodgers and your work, Robert. And so I kind of mix that all and being like, well, what is my main philosophy? I've been through the past 2-3 years. And I think I can put that in a manifesto about stalking Patrick Hyland. And so the words speak for itself on.
So I was reading over the book. Patrick Hyland is hardly ever referenced throughout the book.
No, that he isn't. It's very cryptic and esoteric. Now, I think, well, for any new reader of my work, if you get the book, he actually is mentioned, but it's not specifically said Patrick Hyland. You got to be more cryptic about it, like Boards of Canada and Gio Gatti, where the music, there's subliminal messages. So there's tons of subliminal messages in the following essays in the book. And so I made it there to be cryptic. And once you get the theme of the entire work, whether that's Asian Aryanism or something, you go under the surface and then you see Patrick Hyland and then it all makes sense.
So you have these quotes, which you start off with. I want to read them in praise for Francis Nally. Let's start off with the first one. Perhaps I am a normie then, because it is certainly not good enough for me. That was by Adam Parfrey, and that was in response to the audio quality of the interview we did with him.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That has double meaning, too, because I guess you could translate Parfrey as saying maybe the stark truth isn't good enough for him, and our work ultimately isn't good enough. So,
well, it was his cell phone reception. I had no control over that.
Well, he's a weird eccentric individual. I mean, he's the only guy that publishes child porn and serial killer manifestos and gets away with it, so... You know,
are you talking about Peter Sotos?
No, yeah. I'm talking about Parfrey's decision with Farrell House. I don't even care if it's liberal. He's a shock jock. He's the oldest shock jock, so whatever. I mean, he's the eccentric that thinks we're not good enough for him. Oh, well.
And then you have Lil Asian Pill. I don't know, man. Shit is crazy in general right now. Wild times. And that's Sam Hyde. How did you get to know Sam Hyde or get in contact with him?
That was actually in December of 2016, when I started appearing on your show, Robert, and I sent a lengthy email to Alien Mode, or Sam Hyde, and said, I'd really like you to be on The Stark Truth and everything. And they said, nah, man, I can't do it right now. I'm kind of under fire, because Adult Swim was taking down World Peace. And so I...
Was this right after World Peace was taken down?
It was in the middle of it. It was basically in the, and I didn't know what was happening. So I sent him the book. He looked at it and he sent back with an email that same quote. And that is actually a direct quotation from Sam Hyde and written, and he knows about the work. So yeah, but I feel bad for Sam Hyde now that he's in YouTube with Hyde Wars, and he's kind of like everyone else. He's this YouTube star where everyone loved him, and now he's kind of just there.
Then you have, the alt-right is atrocious, and the fact that you're giving these morons oxygen is more than enough to dissuade me from appearing on your show. That was by Chris Korda. Isn't he the guy who's into Satanism?
He's the Church of Euthanasian guy, the tranny.
Oh, right.
He was on the Springer show back in 97, almost 20 years ago. He has his own electronic music project. J.G. Michaels tried to get him on the show, but I almost had him on the show, and he wanted to be on, but only as written interview. I sent some emails, and then he got upset with me. Yeah?
Did you tell Chris that this was an alt-right show, or did he just come to that conclusion? Because I've never explicitly said that.
I said, I like your shock art personality, and I'm surprised you know who Jim Goad is. And he kind of made the conclusions and like, well, oh, the alt-right's bad, but I'm actually a tranny and cut off my dick and make electronic music. I mean, this guy's got problems, so... I mean, I'm a huge fan of him. No offense, but I'm just saying that, like... I mean, yeah, that's a crazy... So, you know, that's what Chris Korda has to say about me, and I've been a huge fan of Korda's work since I was, like, 13, so just put that in the book. It adds everything up, you know?
And then you have Francis Nally embodies the harmonic whimsicality that Elliot Rodger might have realized had he channeled his emotions more constructively and stuck to Asian chicks. Brandon Adamson, author of Beatnik Fascism, and obviously a regular in the show.
Yep, a good friend. Yeah, he's also wrote The Ford, Robert. We could talk about The Ford. I mean, if Brandon was on, I would like to hear some more opinions on Brandon's. But at one time, you know, it's funny, I knew him as Rabbit. And then one time, this guy named Brandon Adamson came on, and I listened to it, and I was like, is this Rabbit? No, this is Brandon Adamson. And I did my own weird Google search stalking.
Oh, are you saying you doxed him?
No, but I put the pieces together, and then I kind of... Well, you could say that, I assume.
Well, for a while, he was concerned about being doxed, but now, I'm not doxing him, because he's openly honest about using his real name.
Yeah, and that's made me make my decision to go by Francis Nally, and because actually the Antifa tried to dox me, but they got all my information wrong. They got my brother's name and I got my grandma's address, and I thought that was so goddamn stupid. Like, you can't even know my fucking real name, and now I'm just like mad, and it's just like, you know, I would just be honest. I have nothing to
hide.
Yeah,
huh? That's because yeah. I mean, you're doing this stuff that you're doing. I'm like the only person out there. I've had like no interaction with Antifa whatsoever.
It's basically when you hang with them at a hardcore show or in a bar and you do gay stuff, like you're kind of left wing and like liberal.
Oh, it's because you were socializing with them.
Exactly. And it's like a high school, like young kids are into high school shit and it gets really petty. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. So you just have to be professional. And this, now using my real name, Francis Nally, it's more like I have to be professional with my image, but also at the same time have
well,
character.
That's what Luke Ford did, this video about this psychologist on internet personalities. And Luke Ford actually recommends using your real name instead of a pseudonym, because if you use a pseudonym, you tend to get really reckless. And then eventually there's a good chance you're going to be doxxed. So you might as well present yourself as you are and put out a good image of yourself.
Yeah. And that's what I've been trying to learn to do. I mean, the Pill Eater franchise was... I've been with it since I was a teenager, since the days of You're the Man Now Dog, YTMD.com, and it's a troll name. I just went with it, and it's so relative with the whole alt-right pill memes. But now it's just like, well, there's certainly... When I put on the hat, I have an act. And yeah, that may be true, as any comedians have acts, but again, I have... You know, it's better to use your full name, but at the same time, I considered myself, and I always tell this to everyone, an avant-garde artist. Either you get the art or you don't get it.
And then you have Francis Nally inherently understands the alt-right and alt-left are empty signifiers of the same collective, rudderless, underdeveloped males. Almond-eyes, baby-faced, dares to envision a newly grafted race, one willing to pick up arms for its survival. It's refreshing to see such dangerous thought crime still being practiced in these ultra-puritanical times. James Nowak, author of Valencia, and that was published by Chip Smith's Nine Banded Books.
Yeah, I mean, actually, me and James Nowak became friends. I found out him through Twitter, and I think I initiated the conversation, and we had a long talk. I got his phone number. One of my first YouTube shows I did was the Zookook Show, which I still try to do, is I had him on with just a phone conversation. And it was really interesting to talk to him. Sooner or later, he sent me books in the mail, and I sent him the first copies of my books, Almond Eyes, Babyface, and Trip. And we became really good friends, and we started sexing and talking about gay stuff, and it became, like, really intimate. My only concern is that Nulik is on the Peter Soto side, or the whole Pizzagate of, like, you know, cheese pizza, child porn, artsy stuff. And sometimes I'm like, whoa, you know, I like to talk gay stuff. Like, from time to time, Nulik will send me gay porn. I'm like, that's hot. I'll send you gay porn back, or I'll show you what I look like. I don't know. I kind of have this weird daddy thing with James Nowak, so it's just like, I've been trying to put, but I should give him my new book when it's like done at edit. And
so are you into like twinks or guys your own age or daddies?
I mean, it should be people your own age. I mean, the whole daddy thing is like, if you want to be a dependent. I mean, the whole gay thing is like, if you want to act like a dependent girl and pretend you're a girl in a guy's body, of course you're going to go with older people, or you're just fucking useless. Yeah, but then again, it's like, I'm not useless. I'm an independent person, and I'm kind of this artsy-fartsy liberal person, so it's more like there's a dynamic, right? I think the people who have daddy issues really just have daddy rape fantasies, which I do not. I mean, of course I had a verbally abusive upbringing, but that's not going to harm me, you know? It's weird, the whole gay thing. I don't like saying I'm gay. It's more like I'm interested.
You're bi?
Bi curious. I don't know. It's even that too, bi. It's like,
you can appreciate aesthetically pleasing men.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And if you want, you can get it up the ass or you can suck dick. It really depends if you're into that. I mean, it's whole politics behind of it, but it's a lot to get into, so.
So with this book, The Manifesto About Stalking Patrick Hyland, this is like your ultimate manifesto. Almond Eyes Baby Face was just a precursor to this.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first time I came on your show, Robert, was November 2016, and actually, as of around the end of 2015, I had the Asian Aryan quote-unquote ideology in my head. I just didn't have words and meanings through it. I was at my senior year of college. I was kind of the goth kid that wanted to shoot up the school. There were nagging Jews, white guys with hot Asian girls that I didn't have. I was into the weird fiction and weird confronting French continental philosophers being brainwashed. And I was pretty much at a limit where people say, you take the red pill, right? You take the red pill, or that you see a whole new reality. And I wanted to become an artist. I didn't want to become this dependent student in Disney World vacation land. I wanted to start making art, and I certainly offended everyone doing it. But since I've got out of college, I've been trying to de-brainwash, you know, take everything I've unbrainwashed myself, realize that it was just a paper chase for a bachelor's degree. And the manifesto came out. Now, the word Asian Aryanism, I kind of was a word that came together to see the alt-right's hypocrisy when it comes to race mixing. And there still is a giant hypocrisy. And I guess I'm more of a liberal who believes
there's even a list on, I think it was created by the HAPA subreddit, but it was about all alt-right figures who have had Asian girlfriends or Asian fetishes at one point, and you're actually listed on that list.
And so is John Derbyshire and Jared Taylor for some reason. It's really John Derbyshire, but everybody else, it's just, again, I don't like talking about the HAPA. I get haters from everyone, you know. It's not just HAPA. HAPA is just one fringe SJW normie consumer culture that's came from Reddit that doesn't like me. But we're also talking about actual people from the far right or the alt-right that dislike me. And normie leftists and the HAPA Reddit and just artists who disagree. How can you say you dislike John Gray and Terry Englewood? How dare you? I'm kind of, in a way, resurrecting the whole apocalypse culture tradition.
So that's apocalypse culture is what Adam Parfrey and Peter Sotos were doing back in the 90s.
And Jim Goad did with Answer Me. And
oh, right.
And as much as I look up to those people, I'm kind of resurrecting that because I'm kind of this, not that I'm an ultimate skeptic like Jim Goad, but I'm doing something that I like doing, you know. We live in a society where today millennials are very skeptical of boomer and Gen X thought. They are, if you want to say, red pilled. They're anti-SJW. They're going to see Jordan B. Peterson live. They are making, it's like, it's becoming normal to hate the liberal. I mean, there is this cartoon show, The Adventures of Gumball, and in it, Gumball is pretending he's an SJW and he's using the word privilege. They're telling 7-year-old kids that the SJWism is a virus, and this is the virus of cultural Marxism. And so I believe what I'm doing is completely normal. And so I'm just a guy who's really into anti-liberalism or illiberalism, this kind of neo-reactionary thought, mixed with this libertarian ideal where it's okay to race mix. You just have to have institutions and means to do so. Like, Robert, if you want to go after Jewish girls, you got to make Israeli Aryanism happen or some institution. You can't just... Too many people on the alt-right say it's either red or blue. There is no purple. If you're half Asian, go on the Asian side. If you're more on the white side, go on the white side. And all leading alt-right intellects believe that. And we are in a society which is pro-discord, virtual reality, ethno-nationalism, the death of modernism society, where we're becoming all the protagonists to a show nobody is watching, where everything is this preening, hipster, hot topic thing, even through political ideologies. So not that, again, I'm not that I'm an ultimate skeptic. I'm more like this reamped and more educated version of the reactionary and the avant-garde shock artist. So,
who designed the book cover? It has a very like 90s feel to it.
Well, I credit the person as Shelby Criswell, and Criswell's art reminds me of bands like Lightning Bolt, and there was this one Philadelphia record label called Bad Master Records, which I grew up around. They had a similar mascot of this crying man, and I loved it so much, and I told Shelby if he could do that, and he did it like that. And also this ideal of, like, you know, Black Moth Super Rainbow or Treasure Mammal as like, and kind of this like freaky kind of old school lowbrow or fun punk house style of art, because I wanted to get my book out there as that kind of target demographic. I didn't want it to be just the serious, you know, the death of the Antichrist, you know, by Friedrich Nietzsche. No, I wanted it to be like a fun book, because I think most young people today are illiterate. They just want to open up a book and look at big words. They don't want to read philosophy or a biography. That's kind of a boomer or Gen X thing. And so you have to make books more like comic books. And I think Criswell did a great job with the art, and I'm very proud of it. And it really has that attitude in there, most importantly. And I think any young person is willing to pick up this book and hear the word about, you know, telling, hey, it's okay to be white and Asian. It's okay to be bicultural. You don't have to bow down to the multicultural church or the citadel or the consumer culture. You don't have to be a sheep. You could be this rotten, illiberal punk rocker and still get what you want. You don't have to play this petty game of anti-whiteness, right? And that's what I'm really doing, is I'm deprogramming and playing the game of metapolitics to get what I really want, and that's like street Asian American culture.
Well, with the whole Asian theme, are you advocating that the Asian society merges with Western society, or are you just talking about creating your own like niche society?
It's kind of both. It's more like the niche society will happen first. And, like, you're already seeing this with, like, hipster racism, where people on the alt-right are joining in these, like, weird sects of, they call it pool parties. And, you know, they could talk far, you know, they call it the racist frat and tell racist jokes. And they're just uniting on that bond as some social peer outing. And some of them, like Identity Europa, are going out there and changing values and making this identitarianism to the scene. What I'm saying is, well, that could happen to this extreme niche level. If we have vaporwave and there's sea punks or health goths and there's witch house, you know, there could be this weird digital hardcore and Asian American street culture from the pages of Amped Asia and Giant Robot coming out into people, where the art becomes your aesthetic. And that's a reoccurring thing in art. And we're already seeing this right now. I mean, today's large civilization is becoming more Asianized. I'm shocked that all cartoons are done by Koreans overseas or some Japanese Americans, Wamafel couples, Amafel couples, this type of society, which is white people denying that they're white in favor of this anime character. And I just think that's more in line with the truth than anything else.
Well, what Brandon Adamson is saying in his foreword, he says, Francis advocates for a kind of Eurasian futurism that is peculiarly plausible and in fact already emerging as a new aristocracy in some parts of the United States, such as the Silicon Valley and Seattle. I mean, that's absolutely true, but those places are major centers to sort of internationalist thought or SJW thought. How do you address that?
And that's exactly what I'm doing. If that thought, if those elites are SJWs and the liberal globalist, the Kalergi plan, where they're saying lies about how people are going to be multi-racially mixed and create brown people and this terrible thought of egalitarianism. What I'm doing is I'm changing the metapolitics of the quote-unquote multicultural community so they become more libertarian and respecting boundaries and more open to liberal thought. Because being an artist, you're ultimately – you hate normies. You don't want to be a square. You want to be this eccentric queer, and you want to be away from that and in your own world. And only you and other eccentric queers can understand the art that you're making. And so the cultural Marxists in the Frankfurt School has it wrong because they thought they could educate the normie masses to be more open-minded. But really, you just create stupid normies that don't know what they want, because I strongly, and it just shows you that innately people are based upon like a bell curve and IQ. The higher IQ you have, the more you're open to eccentric arts. The artist is an aristocracy that's divided from the normie class. And we're both talking now, we're a part of that artsy class, and we talk in these weird words. You know, if we go to some Walmart or some boring place in Ohio, nobody thinks like us. It's only, and that's where people on the internet are uniting. And so,
well, I remember when we were talking to that artist, Arthur Kwon Lee, he's Korean American, and he was saying that in Asian culture, artists actually have less status. There's more pressure to have a practical job, like to become a doctor. It seems to be more of a trait of European culture, where there's a stronger emphasis on being an artist or intellectual rather than just going out and making money.
That is actually a dark truth, where if you want to get into race realism, the argument that some white nationalists make is that supposedly white people have that quote-unquote Faustian creation of intellectualism and creativity, and then you see just Asians mimicking that. Or the typical black people are just primitive, or like the Flintstones. This is this thought. It's weird because, you know, liberals try to say, well, there's Guahinian film culture and the Japanese have anime. Yet oddly enough, it's weird because I look at it like this. If there's a white guy with a Chinese girlfriend, it's most likely he's into STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math. But if this white guy has a Japanese girlfriend, chances are he's a musician or a fine artist. There's some weird.
I think there's a distinction. I haven't been to Asia, but I get the impression that Japan does have a stronger emphasis on creativity, where in Chinese culture it's all about going into STEM.
And we could talk about the theories of quote unquote Asian Aryanism and why Japanese are actually Aryans that are related to the Icelandic or Ainu people, and they have the Western spirit, and but there's these thoughts where there's a sweppleness, stuff white people like, where white people will take the things they want to listen to, right? White people don't want to listen to Chris Brown or XXXTentacion. They want to listen to JPEG Mafia or KRS-One, where they're black people rapping over glitch beats because white people like glitch beats. Or white people, when they think Asian culture, they think Japanese because Japanese make the anime, the games, the arts, not the Chinese or the just recently.
Or in a lot of, I've noticed in alt-right circles, they seem, a lot of them view the Japanese as kind of honorary Aryans, but they view the Chinese as a threat.
Oh yeah, I've heard that before, and so it's obviously you should try to find a Japanese girlfriend if that's possible. Well, if you're in California, it's highly possible. Maybe New York City, but it's very rare. But again, we see these themes where there's this second-class jewelry class of Eurasians, where if we have enough biculturalism between whites and Asians, they'll create this Eurasian superclass, whether that's supporting the Clarity Plan or SJWism.
Well, the thing is, right now, if you talk about Asian Aryanism, I mean, no offense, but it does come across as this weird, eccentric, autistic, like 4chan culture. But in the future, it could emerge into something actually tangible, because it's inevitable that Eurasians are a growing demographic. So isn't it better for them to have a healthy sense of identitarianism or identity, rather than just being these kind of rootless cosmopolitans?
That's exactly right. I mean, biculturalism is not multiculturalism. And multiculturalism argues that everyone should have multi-ethnicities and racially mix. And that's not why I'm for. I advocate human biodiversity, meaning that whites are whites and Asians are Asians. But if you're biracial, you should be with other biracial people. There can be mingling of the cultures, whites and Asians or Asians and whites dating. But they have to be in those areas, wherever that's Chinatown and neo-Nazi land of the Man in the High Castle or something of the
and
nature.
I was watching the Man in the High Castle, and I was kind of contracting the Japanese-dominated San Francisco Bay Area to the San Francisco Bay Area today. And in the Man in the High Castle, the Japanese – or is it High Castle or High Tower? I think it's High Castle.
High Castle.
Yeah, the Japanese are like the dominant elites, and they are very ruthless and authoritarian, but they allow the middle-class white people in this SF Bay Area to have their own prosperous communities. The situation today, if you go to a place like the Silicon Valley, you just see a massive Chinese immigration driving out all the white people out of the region, and I don't see that as such a great thing, but in a place like the Bay Area, I mean, I don't know if it's practical, but in an ideal utopian world, I'd like to see it carved up into a bunch of independent city states. So maybe like the Silicon Valley could be an Asian Aryan society, but other parts of the Bay Area that are more European American could be like European American societies, and you could have both.
That's exactly what this illiberal thought is. It's division. It's discord society. It's quote-unquote ethno-nationalism.
Are you saying that? You think that would be a good thing to have these independent city states where both groups...
Where basically consumer culture becomes our reality and Hot Topic becomes a civilization. And that seemingly is what's happening. People don't get along in egalitarian or multicultural or quote-unquote diverse societies. They just start war. So if everyone had an IRL Discord server, they can go to wherever they want in these weird virtual bubbles. But however... A part of this whole human biodiversity plan is kind of upholds this weird objective libertarian ideal of, you know, everybody respecting their boundaries as well as new people. And I could definitely see if whites voluntarily had to decide what they want to be, Aryan women in the wheat field 1488ism or anime character Eurasian California skate culture, they would choose the latter, and we would see so many white people doing that. I think white people today are so deracinated from like white culture. They just want this infusion between the Asian and white. I think the only thing white people have left is like Plato, Shakespeare, Aristotle, and a bunch of douchebag modern writers like David Foster Wallace. So, I mean, those Sweppel people can go over there, and white people will continue to discriminate on the ideals of Christian Lander and stuff white people like. But again, I strongly believe most white people want to be anime characters.
And you were even going as far as to say the society you're advocating, there could be different quarters. So you would have Eurasians, you would have Wamafels, you would have...
Amafels, Asian male. Amafel,
whitewashed Asians, and then whites who are into Asian culture.
I say this in my book because a lot of people don't understand this, and I have to say this over and over again. People think in terms of red or blue. They never think in terms of purple. And so and such ideals. I always talk, you know, my article, White Asian or Eurasian, or the ideal of the, you know, Asian Aryan Ubermensch. It's this ideal that you can have all these people living in communities together. You don't have to force egalitarianism, but you force this ideal of wherefore this Eurasian futurism, or this is the new white, you know, Jennifer.
Or is this kind of a society like a Singapore, but in reverse?
Yeah.
If you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's going to be like an Americana Singapore. And there was this one supposedly writer, Jennifer Suzuki, who I think it's a pen name of a certain troll, but she wrote that people will be united as long as they're white. And we're already seeing this with other non-whites. I mean, most non-whites who go to punk rock shows think they're white, but then they're anti-white at the same time. And so white, to most white people, is being egalitarian or universal. And so if you told most Asians that they're white, they will think in those terms. The same. I was on the Hapa Ethno State live stream on Nico Nico's and Shane's. There's this new YouTube channel by the name of Hapa Supremacy, and they're taking Asian Aryanism to a whole new level. And I actually I moved my website to pilleater.com because I didn't want to wave the Asian Aryan flag anymore. So these professionals, they're doing it, but they're calling it Hapa Supremacy. And I was invited on their live stream to talk about the same white Asian or Eurasian labeling. The only thing that that has to be talked about through biculturalism is this concept of anti-whiteness. It's either you're going to cooperate with whites, or you're not, or you're anti-white. And if you're anti-white, then you're a nationalist. But there's some people who are anti-white, and they want white people to wipe their ass. And that's exactly the whole liberal feudalist Black Lives Matter thing. And so
you're talking about creating this new culture and society based on a union of two races. Isn't there going to be like some point where there's going to be tension between the two? That seems to always happen in biracial societies.
If that happens, then they can move to China in America or white America in America. It's basically a whole tug of war. It seems to me that the dark truth, you know, they talk about is that it's impossible for white male Asian female to happen. It's a fetish couple, or that Asian male white female is just a rare circumstance. We have live in this bleak society where we have the spirit to go. You know, if you want to use the word transhumanism, as much as I'm against transhumanism, you know, we have this spirit to create a legacy, but no one wants to plant seeds and struggle. It's more like choose the side, choose the shoes your favorite to fit in. And I say the shoe allegory fits the Asian Aryan shoes. And I think today we're seeing a society. Now I'm going to say something. One of my favorite feminist writers is Andrea Jorkin. Who's, you know, this fat feminist writer who doesn't like pornography, but she has some wisdom.
Oh, she says that all sex is rape.
Yeah, but she has some wisdom, and I
she
think
does.
And her wisdom is Judeo-Christian, meaning that she believes in the Christian spirit. And as a Jew who will deconstruct other Jews, she's saying that today's date rape or sex culture you hear everywhere, the MTV culture, is all rape. The Tinder thing, the white guy's gonna bang some Viet girl on Tinder just for fun, and this Viet girl who's like on Tinder 22, I've had sex with 13 men. To Dorkin, you're a victim. And that's what I really like about Dorkin. I've always been a porn nerd, you know. I've always been interested in pornography because I always was fascinated with the porn actresses and
especially Harriet Sugarcookie.
Or like Peter North or like Brad Knight, these men who are like have to make their jalack their dicks so it looks like it's big, but it's actually a guy who works out all the time and has daddy traumas, and that fascinates me. And that how those two cultures who come from, I don't want to say poverty, but you know, not that they're poor, but this damaged culture, and somehow they're able to work it. Luke Ford talks about it all the time, and Luke Ford had the audacity to be a journalist in the porn world. And I think that's that culture, the whole sex worker culture, is fringe like white nationalism. But again, it's either you're this prude for this society where, you know, things are going to work out, you know, the chivalrous trad family, and there are people who argue that, especially on the countercurrent side. But then again, there's the fascination with street culture and the pulp life of, you know, James Bond having sex with every single non-white woman in the world.
And you talk about both themes about morality. Do you advocate more freedom to be hedonistic and to have promiscuous sex and to watch porn? Do you favor like strong family bonds, or do you favor a balance of both?
I favor strong family bonds. The thing with that culture, it sounds like William Burroughs is junkie. And I think what happened was white people, and especially the baby boomer generation, lived basically in the suburbs of Kansas. And they read Burroughs, and they read Ginsberg and Kerouac, and they thought, if only my life was that exciting. And most of the time, most normal people, their lives are not exciting at all. And so everybody wants to be this degenerate MTV star, and doesn't happen. Everybody wants to be this punk rocker. I mean, I'm for favor. If we had family bonds, we would have white male, Asian female, Asian male, white female producing Eurasian children by the dozen, and a society, a socialist economy that could do that. Maybe socialist, I don't know. But
so you don't know what kind of economic system you'd have.
There's this Chinese guy running for president, and he says he wants to give $1,000 for every millennial a month, so you can spend the money on whatever, your rent. And
so you're basically talking about some kind of a basic income.
Andrew Yang wants to run for president and promised free cash outs $1,000 every month. Andrew Yang, who's running for American president, and that's an Asian. And you could talk Asian Aryanism all you want, but that's a fascinating thing, whether that you call that socialism or some kind of economic boost. But if our economy was much better and we had stronger family values, oh, guys would be going with their anime waifus and having beautiful anime kids more often. They're not doing that because their society promotes cowboyism, Tinder culture. And I think that degenerate culture, unfortunately, is our elites. And our elites, if they have all the money in the world, they can be sinners. You know, I'm kind of an esoteric Shinto Christian myself, and that's what they do. They basically do these depraved, decadent movie star, porn star role things. I mean, to be quite frank, I mean, sex to me is like, yes, it's enjoyable, but it's really only enjoyable with one, a woman that is desirable, and how much she loves you. And there is this talk about, you know, sex with different women and men. You learned that from James Bond. I mean, I had sex with a black chick and I felt very primal, like I was having sex with an animal, you know, or like, and that may be true, but it's also a lot of people who have sex the first time it's a lot of trying to find out what fits for you. It's like going to the clothes store and saying, is it okay I fuck an Antifa fat Mexican chick? Is it okay I have sex with this girl who has this weird, you know? And so it's not that it's promoting promiscuous sex.
I mean, if you sleep with someone you don't have a strong attraction to, depending on whether it's a strong physical attraction to, or whether you don't have romantic feelings towards, in the short term it can be a quick fix, but in the long run it does damage your self-esteem.
Exactly. And it's worse for women too. Women get damagingly for promiscuous sex. In fact, if you just have sex with one girl who's never had sex in her life before, she will be with you for life. And if you're that same guy, it's your value goes up. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people who promote this promiscuous culture, they never talk about, you know, they never talk about if they're going to have a kid. You know, they seem, I'm going to put my dick in a vagina and hopefully no seed of sperm is going to go in her vagina and she's going to have a kid because she's on the pill. I mean, they talk about sex as going in quote unquote raw, like a dick in a vagina. But again, it's like, is it sex if you put on a condom on your dick and go in the vagina, you know? And I'm always, you know, and that's what I'm like too. I mean, I have a girlfriend right now, but like, I'm always scared. I'm like, hey, honey, I don't want to put my dick in your vagina because I'm afraid we're going to have a kid and you're not ready to have a kid. And she's like, oh, I'm on a pill, or I don't know, you know? And so I guess most guys who are into promiscuous sex are just serial cum shotters. They just want cum in the girl's face, pretty much. Now, what's wrong is that these guys who become more quote-unquote experienced, I mean, let's talk about the MGTOW and manosphere culture. What happens is we're now being told, oh, it's just another bitch, get on the next train. And then what happens is it creates promiscuous culture. If you have a
thin... And, you know, someone like Roosh V, he can give advice and he can help men benefit themselves in the short run. But what he's doing, I mean, I agree with Greg Johnson's critique of him. What he's doing is not really good for society as a whole.
It's consensual date rape culture. That's really what exactly. It is. It's like this consensual, well, it's supposedly this other normie girl knows how to play quote-unquote game. Therefore, you just have to do this charade, and, you know, fake it till you make it. And that's exactly how game works. You fake everything till you make it. And then, after sleeping in bed, what else? Are you, you know, today in millennials, it means that if you have sex with someone, it's like, well, you're going to start dating now, or sex is just sex. You can't convolute it with dating. Most millennials forgot that baby boomers actually thought of sex as sacred, that sex was something you did after marriage. And that was like almost a different world. But most non-white people today think sex is something sacred as well. I mean, there are savage non-white people who believe in promiscuous sex and just like Vikings and get what they want and addiction. But again, there's this obsession right now in the West where everyone's a porn star. All the girls are adult film actresses.
Yeah, that your chapter of The Proud Beta Male is all about.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there's so much attacking on the beta male. Like, I remember in 2011, I first heard the alpha, beta, delta, gamma thing actually from your own podcast during the days of Voice of Reason. And it was talked about in MGTOW forums. There was nothing bad about being alpha or beta. It just was. I thought, okay, I take the test. I'm a delta. You deserve to be with one person for the rest. I'm like, okay, that's normal. Then all of a sudden, there is this whole self-improvement, the way of men kind of male improvement. You know, the classic toxic masculinity that got in. And supposedly, alpha meant ethically good and beta meant ethically bad. And now that predates, like, it's like normies now use the word cuck. Cuckold came from Gregory Hood's article about cuckservative, the cuckservatives. And that's when the alt-right called everyone cuckservatives because it nailed the truth. And now you see normies calling each other cucks. I mean, if Blair White, some right-wing tranny, is calling some YouTube personality a cuck, I don't know. And I'm called a cuck, a literally cuckold, because it means you don't want to procreate with white people, you know, all this stupid nonsensical shit.
Is your article the Asian feminist fallacy? Are you saying that Asian feminists are different than white feminists?
Well, for that one, yeah. I mean, for that article, I had a girlfriend last year who was she was an editor for Amped Asia, and she did cam videos. She was like this Chinese cam girl, and you could say I had an adult actress girlfriend for like 4 months, and we used to hang out, you know, and, you know, do sex stuff. And then and she would say, oh, I always wanted a white boyfriend, but all the white guys just pumped and dumped me just like you. And I'm like, wait a second. And, you know, I'm pretty much a chaste prude guy. And you're telling me that I'm in it just to rape you, that you have it all wrong. I think most white men are willing to start families. But the Asian feminist fallacy is assuming that they can be promiscuous or they can be crazy or some kind of – or anti-white because white men don't accept me. I think a lot of African-American girls – or black girls feel the same way about white guys dating them. They think a lot of white guys don't want to date black girls is because white guys are not into like hula hoop earrings, afro hair, and hip hop. Okay, that may be true. They want to be loved for who they are. And most Asian girls and black girls will find love if they found an authentic white guy into that. But they play this. But this weird part is they're anti-white, and that's what's coming from liberal society. They want to be anti, and that's causing more divide.
Do you remember that Korean SJW who had that sign that said, sit down and let me abolish you?
And I tried to get Franny Choi on the Stark Truth. Ooh, well, you know, well, I think she only says that to her white boyfriend, who probably abolishes her at night.
you do talk about introducing the alt-left, and by the alt-left, are you talking about not so much like the radical left, but more the project that Brandon Adamson started? And
that's exactly right. I mean, one of the first
the basic principles of the alt-left, you say, are friends, family, and freedom.
One of the first, that's right. One of the first blog posts I wrote during my college years was the alt-left, because I was very influenced by Rabbit's alt-left. And I remember the first time when I was first time on your podcast, you asked me that, and I tried to use my own words to describe it. And what I did with that article was I put it out in clarity. And I think I did a good job with that. And I did a video of it too. And that's what, you know, I use the term apocalypse culture, you know, facetiously. And I also tend to think, well, Asian Aryanism is a subgenre of the alt-left, because other things could happen from the alt-left. You know, I'm just this weird Asian fringe faction. I'm like a sub-sub-sub-genre, right? And I could wave the alt-left flag, but some people are doing that. Now
yeah,
Donald
it's a
Trump
really
is-
minuscule group. I mean, the alt-left started as the left wing of the alt-right, so you're like a niche, a tiny niche within a tiny niche.
I know, and it's just like, well, I might as well be an avant-garde artist and who's into these fringe stuff that similar people like, and then go around spreading ideals. It's just really hard to lift things on your back. I mean, I now just want to represent myself and my work, my music I have on cassettes, and my YouTube videos and my social media. In about like a few weeks, on May the 5th in Philadelphia, I will be having my first concert as Feven Universe. And I'm going to be selling cassettes and maybe some books. And I booked the show. So the headliner is Groceries, followed by Def Demag Shroud and Vincent Remember. And I will be the opening act. And I'm just going to dress up in a bunny suit with a rainbow hula hoop and dance to dance to my electronic beats with my and do a set for 10 minutes, and you know, just get and say, hey, cool, Pill Eater, and some guys like a Babylonian Jew, and maybe Alex Goldstein might show up, and some other good friends.
Oh, you mean Babylonian Hebrew from Louis Ford's podcast?
Yeah, we got good friends, Babylonian Hebrew, might there. So it's going to be a big official alt left meetup at about. Oh, and J.G. Michaels, too, in Harlan Venison, we have coming there. So it's going to be a big East Coast IRL meeting in Philadelphia, in West Philadelphia, on May the 5th. About five people who've worked with the Stark Truth are going to show up at this house party event, with over 120 people, according to our Facebook statistics, at the Sound Hole in Philadelphia, May the 5th. And it's definitely going to be an IRL Asian Aryan excitement party full of non-white hipsters and other things. So I think this is as a progressive move to what I'm doing and getting my art out there.
And yeah, you got to get your art out there if you want to promote culture. Then culture will lead to these grander political ideals.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. There definitely is a homo nationalist scene in Philadelphia, but it's a very small number of kids. But the homo nationalist scene was basically when Countercurrents came in, and that was like basically at a Chinese restaurant. It was like, yeah, that's cool, but now the homo nationalists are kind of fringe, because it's like, oh, the alt-right broke up, and they'll only be back together if, you know, Def in June or some neo-folk act shows up, and it's like, never really was my thing, and now that Antifa's on their tail, it's like,
would you say that Countercurrents is the main center of homo nationalism?
It is. I mean, the last chapter of my book, I put a bonus article, and I want to talk about homo nationalism, because I think homo nationalism is very cutting edge. I know Milo was kind of the mainstream normie version of it, but if I could, I was thinking of making homonationalism.com, but then again, that would be like Asian Aryanism, and it would take a lot of time, and so I'm just going to focus more homo nationalist articles on my website when I have the time. But they're more like into this ideal of gays who like far-right stuff because they miss 1950s America, because gays want to be queer, not just sexually deviant, but like eccentrically queer, so the normies could do normie things, and queers can be queers, and the progressive stack could be reverse.
Yeah,
white males,
it's like
to
what
speak.
Milo said this a lot, and even James O'Meara has touched upon it in his work. Is Milo said that when homosexuality was underground, it was cool and avant-garde. Now homosexual culture has become kind of lame because it's part of the mainstream consumer culture.
That's right. It's not like Ellsworth Kelly or anything like that. It's basically because of the Frankfurt School and the people who are underground just wished everybody thought like them. But I think people are forgetting the innate race realist law that there are normies that are going to norm and they don't know. And normies should be left in their normie Kentucky environment. They shouldn't belong in Philadelphia or NYC or San Fran.
Because that was the point of the whole 60s movement. It was a movement of trying to change the culture of the normies. I'm more interested in creating like these smaller elite avant-garde groups.
And so I think what homo nationalism does is that it inverses this and says the progressive stack is the white male, the white working class male speaks first. Society is uphold, and you know it's just like what O'Mara said in the homo negro. It's basically the gay person works to uphold and save civilization like a monk, and then
by the homo and the negro, he doesn't mean that in a literal sense. To him, the negro symbolizes like the kind of not necessarily an African American, but they could be like a white person who's just kind of a crude kind of machismo mentality, while the homo symbolizes the cultural aristocrat.
Yeah. And it's basically if things were more like a normal society, not degenerate, then cops and culture could hate things which are eccentric, then advocate them, because it's stupid, because there's a hypocrisy in our culture. If our culture says it's okay to be tranny, then how come it doesn't like serial killer manifestos and child porn fan fiction? That doesn't make any sense, because if our society was really Y-merica, it would assume that the most avant-garde edgy things are cool, but it's not. And that goes to show you with the thesis that there is a hostile elite that's anti-white and wants to kill everyone. It's not in favor of the arts. And so we really have a decadent society that is falling and that's being depraved. It's so depraved that even men don't want to get along. Like, men are hostile to them. James O'Mara wrote this in his Boy Love essay about how men don't want to be men anymore. And they want to be like macho guys. We're going to fuck a lot of women. And women are sexual objects, when really men's relationships are drastically improved when you talk deep like girls and maybe some gay sex here and there. I'm not saying have gay sex with everyone you see, but I'm saying is if men were just to like,
yeah,
cuddle,
I mean, even just stuff like that. I remember reading some article from a mainstream publication, like men used to shower together in schools and now that's considered gay.
Yeah. And you know, I'm like showering with another guy. And I think that's
awesome. It's a great thing. It's part of,
I know, yeah.
Male bonding, but
I mean, the thing is, it feels so awkward because it's like you're male bonding through sexuality, and it becomes weird at first. But hey, that's what the whole point of the gay. See, if there's one thing gays understand is that they're missing out. They chimed in into that head.
But the thing about gay, a lot of like left wing gay culture celebrates stuff that's vulgar. I think if gay culture is going to be do something positive, they have to sort of celebrate the aesthetically pleasing men as opposed to the kind of the vulgar imagery of a lot of left-wing gay culture.
No doubt about it. Most gays that are celebrated in our
society. I think the ideal of gay culture is like ancient Greece and Rome.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm talking in those terms. Are the gays that are celebrated today are degenerate daddy issues. They were like raped when they were five, and they have this issue of being raped by their dad over and over again. And basically now we have innocent kids who are basically like, they can't get girls, so they think they're gonna get with guys. They get with the guy, and the guy's a serial killer and beats him up, and it's disgusting. And that, and then the kid's more traumatized because he thinks he's gay. No, it's basically setting you up. And what's even more bad about most gay sex today, it's really a power dynamic. It really is that if you're the bottom and you're being like, this guy's like fucking you, it's like you are this thing that's like being used, and he's putting it in his score pad. And to me, that goes back to Dworkin. So even in gay sex is rape as well. And to sound like a prude again, that's what I'm talking about. Maybe if things were more like the Lassie Nielsen Roman society where, like, I mean, I had this experience in, like, middle school. I remember just, like, going after the showers all naked and then, like, hugging
guys.
Was
it as good as the Lasse Nielsen film?
Yeah, it was. I'm not making this up. And we would just be like, oh, our dicks are out together. How big's your dick? And and we'd just be, like, cool with it. And then we would, like, afterwards, like, talk about problems on the bus. It was more like, you know, again, James Jamara says when guys start talking about girls, they have to separate their love for one another in favor of getting girls. And that's important, too. You want to have kids. But I don't know. I just think there's, like, a different aesthetic when men in this Greek society are just two naked guys in front of the room and they're just want to be normal. But it's like, again, you have to be – I don't know. It's a weird subject.
You talk about the cult of the extroverts, and your basic premise is just that introverts are the ones who create most of the culture and innovations, while extroverts are the ones who enjoy them. That's your basic premise?
Oh, yeah. The cult of the extroverts was written on my – anger against how
so this, a lot of these are articles that you've previously published.
Yes, on AsianArianism.com. The cult of the extrovert is about how I see the arts today and social gatherings. A lot of people in the alt-right believe it's a movement when in fact it's just a cult of extroverted hipsters, right? And so what happens is,
yeah, I've noticed that in the art world, like a lot of the best, the people who get these like grand art shows, they're not the best artists, but they either have wealthy parents or they're really embedded in the hipster scene and they can invite all their friends.
Yeah, and it becomes social capital or social network, right?
Exactly.
We're treating people as assets and capital. And so the alt-right and the 4chan culture was made through introversion, stay at home, Kentucky, Cincinnati, Ohio, you know, by introverts. And then there's a girl or a guy that's good looking and he's more extroverted, but becomes literally a politician for the introverted claims and claims to be one of us. And this has a lot to do with high school preening or queer culture. And so, you know, there's people like Emily Yukas and other individuals who were based on extroversion, and they're gone now in the scene because, well, all of it was pretty much a supreme contest. And that's how the alt-right is collapsing.
There was this like brief period where it was seen as being cool to be alt-right, but now the alt-right is completely collapsed.
Yeah, and if you're really true, you have to understand that everybody's a hipster, everybody's preening, it's a lot like high school, and if you want to grow up and be an adult with it, then be the Donald Trump businessman and set forth franchise and brand names and identities and understand that, are you sure this is true or you're just a part of this fan club and you're just an exploited little normie sheep who happens to be? And then you start to realize there is no eccentric artist, right? So I just don't understand why there's so many people on the alt-right that say, yeah, Adolf Hitler, Siege, read Siege. Yet they cringe their skin, curl their skin when they read Jim Goad's Answer Me, or you say, I want a race mix. Like, the normies are thinking they're edgy people. And that just
Didn't someone say Answer Me was degenerate? I forget who it was, but I heard Jim Goad said some prominent figure dismissed him as being degenerate.
Maybe Greg Johnson? I don't know. I mean,
possibly, but I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Put a dick in my mouth. but yeah, I mean, just like, I know, it's just like, you're a degenerate. You're so degenerate. And it's like, oh, well, how dare you? You're from Florida.
Well, Jim was saying that in his interview with Luke Ford, if you watch that. Jim Goad said that he hates the hyper-moralistic people in the alt-right. Like the Trad Workers Party.
Yeah, it basically becomes a LARP contest, and you're no different than anyone who goes to a video game convention and LARPs. You're basically having fun time on your own as a consumer. Until you understand we are all consumers doing social preeningness, anything, and that's the problem with a lot of politics today. And that goes for the left as well, and the Antifa. You see, Antifa is just a bunch of college kids wearing black masks and stuff like that, and
One last thing I'll comment on is Fashwave, your article, Fashwave versus Fashwave sectarianism versus Vaporwave hegemony. And I think the Fashwave aesthetic, I think it's awesome. I'm a big fan of it. But the thing is, it's not really original. When I look at Fashwave, They're just copying what the new retrowave scene was doing, but they're taking that aesthetic and then adding in, like, alt-right symbolisms, like, say, like a neon sunwheel.
Greg Johnson had an article on Countercurrents about how the alt-right is stuck in a right-wing ghetto, meaning that the alt-right will forever be, quote-unquote, right-wing. Greg Johnson is in the business of saving the white race and for white advocacy. And so you have to be both left-wing and right-wing. And this is what I had a problem with
I do think that Fascwave is a step in the right direction because it's futuristic, so it is breaking away from that kind of rigid right-wing radical traditionalism.
Well, what happened is the people who are making the Fascwave art are just alt-right trolls.
It's a great aesthetic, but they're just copying the existing retrowave aesthetic.
That's what I'm saying, and they're coming from TRS, and they're not understanding, well, what about Eco Jams and Macintosh Plus and Blank Banshee? They don't get it. They think it's just – they don't want to do their research and learn about our roots, about why vaporwave today or retrowave is big. They just assume this Trojan horse mentality and go with it, and so liberal pieces – will say, this is exactly what the right's been doing. They've been mimicking everything from the right. And so you can, like, one thing the right-wing owns is neo-folk, you know, like Deaf and June and things like that, or like Dead Can Dance, or some other, because it's naturally the byproduct of traditionalism or something like that. But to basically make pop songs and just say a bunch of racist things, it's not going to change anything. It's just, oh, I like this because it's based. Oh, yeah, this is based. That doesn't work.
And, yeah, Greg Johnson has this essay called West Coast White Nationalism, which had a pretty major impact on me. He's not talking about what you're talking about with Eurasianism, but he's talking about a sort of Eurocentric society based on SWPL values and the positive aspects of the left.
Yeah, and, you know, for something that's so cutting edge, it's, you know, it may be sadly true that today the arts is with the left wing, and there's this belief that only the left wing can create good art. That's not true. There's great right wing pieces of art as well. And art should invoke all emotions, and that's what good art does. But at the same time, we have to remember not to be the fedora tier, you know, atheist Scientology art that's like, oh, this is a-religious. I think that's really stupid too, but art does have agendas and motivations, and it tells people to do things. And I think it's, you know, if the right wing is to go anywhere, they gotta stop mimicking what the left is doing. They gotta do their own thing. I mean, it's just, they think they can do more recruits, and then one recruits like me and you, and I'm trying to do it, they think they'll make good art. And then when you actually become a really good artist, they say you're a degenerate or a Jew. And that's exactly what's happening with me. Look, it's all about honesty and telling the truth. Most people don't tell the truth. Most people are liars. All normies are liars. When you see somebody who's being a cuck and saying, oh, this is all about egalitarianism, I'm race blind, they're lying. Or when they make truth and they say this thing, you got to tell the truth. And what I'm doing is I'm telling the truth. I'm not some kind of religious person saying I have some convoluted ideology and forcing it and distorting the world. No, I'm just telling the truth and how I see things. All I ask from normal people and eccentric people is to tell the truth and be honest and stop lying and stop projecting and pretending they're this, because everyone is open to criticism and you just have to deal with that.
We are at the end of the show, but before I wrap things up, do you have one thing to kind of summarize your manifesto that you want to mention?
Well, my book, A Manifesto at Stocking Pirate Trick Island, is now out on Lulu. There's also my other books, Trip and Almond Eyes Babyface. You can find about more in my blog post at www.pilleater.com. I have some music releases as well on cassette. If you want to support my music, I would love that as well. And hopefully, if any of you are listening to this, I hope to talk to you as well.
Francis Nally, it's been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you too, Robert.